Hello and welcome to the latest Mooney on Politics podcast, which is being recorded Wednesday lunchtime at around 1:30. It's the 13th of October. As always, this podcast reflects and is based on last Monday's broadsheet article. As I've mentioned many times here before, the truest rule of politics that I'm aware of is Lyndon Johnson's famous "Never tell a man to go to hell unless you can send him there." As a first rule of real politics, it says I don't think anything stands up to it, because it recognises that today's enemies may be tomorrow's allies, while warning you that hollow threats only expose the weakness of those making them. I haven't really talked about my second favourite political saying, which is "You buy your colours on the way into a match, not on your way out." Now, this one comes from somebody a million miles away from Lyndon Johnson, and that was the yellow rose of Inglis himself, the late Jim Tunney. People of a certain age might recall Jim, but Jim was a junior minister, Lord Mayor of Dublin, and a Fianna Fáil TD for about 23 years. I think he lost his seat in 92. He prided himself on his absolute loyalty to the party leader, and for most of his career that was Charlie Haughey. Now, not only did Tunney have a penchant for quoting himself, he tended to do it in the third person. So he uttered the phrase less as a strategy and more as a self-description, especially when he was defending his decision while Parliamentary Party Chairman to hold open roll call votes rather than secret ballots. At the time, this had the effect of legitimising the arm-twisting and bullying of TDs during the various leadership heaves against Haughey. But his pricing approach of buying your team colours on the way in still works as a guiding principle for most politicians, because it's better when politicians are clear where they stand on big issues in advance, rather than waiting to see what way the wind blows. And by the way, this is particularly true for those who've attained positions of great leadership. Now, I add attaining positions of great leadership codicil because I'm not so naive as to imagine that there aren't times when even the most righteous and right-thinking leader doesn't need to duck and dive and weave around the place as they climb the greasy ladder to success. So where am I going with all this, you ask? Well, Tunney's phrase kept popping into my mind as I mulled over the government's decision to send both Minister Simon Coveney and the government chief whip, Jack Chambers, to the well-intentioned but ill-considered church leader service in Armagh at the end of October. Now, I've made the arguments against the Irish government attending this service here several weeks ago, and I personally believe that the arguments for the president not attending apply to the government, though the government doesn't see it this way. Put briefly, those arguments are that I don't object to the service, and I can totally understand why the churches think it's fine to set this up. I also have no problem understanding why unionists and loyalists wish to celebrate Northern Ireland's foundation. I mean, like, why should I object to it? Its creation is a basic statement of fact, and it's part of this shared island's often sad history. What I do have a problem with is the idea that making a gesture and attending a service that commemorates partition, now whether it calls it marking it, celebrating it or commemorating it isn't terribly important, is the fact is that it does mark it. And that somehow or other doing the gesture of attending is more important than an elected leader staying true to who they are. Because the purpose of commemoration, especially the commemoration of events that were divisive, is to encourage all sides to broaden their sympathies without requiring them to abandon their beliefs or their allegiances. Now, you can tonify this by saying, well, you don't buy both sets of colours on the way in or the way out of a match just to convince the other team that you'd be just as happy if they won, because they simply won't believe it, and neither that, they won't respect you. Yet it seems that's what we've done in agreeing to send Coveney and Chambers, or should I say, half done. If the intention of sending these two ministers was to show governmental bipartisanship, why send one junior and one senior? Why not send one of the five senior Fianna Fáil ministers at the cabinet table who sit there alongside Coveney? Why pick Jack Chambers? Why not send Norma Foley or Michael McGrath or Charlie McConlogue or Stephen Donnelly or Dara O'Brien instead? Did this five decline the poison chalice, knowing the problems they would stir up for themselves with supporters and backbench colleagues if they accepted? And we saw from last Sunday's front page of the Sunday Times, there is a considerable disquiet within the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party at this. Not only that, amongst the membership and amongst councillors. Indeed, I've seen several Fianna Fáil councillors put out statements saying why they were calling on Jack Chambers to withdraw. So was Jack Chambers just the poor unfortunate who was holding the passing parcel when the music stopped? Or did Micheál Martin conclude that Chambers, whose much snapped and much reported visits to sports centres and across the country have filled the Instagram timelines of countless TDs and councillors, did he feel he might benefit from close association with the latest unpopular position from Micheál Martin? Well, we might never know or even care. But whatever the reason, no one could hail it as a bold decision. But then neither boldness nor bravery in decision making are traits much associated with Micheál Martin. Now, I know this is not how Micheál Martin's supporters see it. I can almost hear either of them hailing his repeal the eighth position as an example of Martin leading from the front. And that's a very fair claim, because he did take a clear position. he was not ambiguous about it. Now, it was also one that did not find favour with most people in his own party, certainly not in his parliamentary party. And as we saw with the unformed partial leaks from the party's internal report into its dire 2020 general election showing, many around Martin still blamed TDs not backing Martin on the repeal of the 8th as being a primary cause of their failure to succeed at the 2020 general election. But you see, things aren't that simple. Indeed, it wasn't until the publication of the full Fleming report that it emerged that the Flemings Committee had attributed the 2020 failures to a far wider range of factors. They did include the attitude of the parliamentary party to repeal the 8th and the number of people who were against it as a factor, but it also pointedly remarked to Fianna Fáil's position on Northern Ireland, saying that it does not differ significantly from the other political parties. The report also lamented the dominant role played by full-time officials of the party, both in election management and manifesto preparations, and bemoaned the fact that there wasn't greater oversight by the parliamentary party and elected people. It also cited the December 2018 extension of the confidence supply agreement of Fine Gael as a primary reason for Fianna Fáil's lack of success in 2020. And don't forget that this 2018 extension of confidence supply was a solo-run Martin decision, which his supporters are less anxious to talk about. There was also finding that, and this is the important one, there was also finding that the majority of party members are unclear about our distinct identity. Let me focus on that for a few minutes, because notwithstanding the passivity of the language, this finding in itself is shocking. Because basically what is that an internal report of the party has found that the party's leadership has failed over a decade to give members a clear, concise vision or message as to what differentiates Fianna Fáil from other parties. So what chance do these members, the ones who select the candidates, have in convincing the voters that the party is different? And it's a fundamental problem to which there is a straightforward solution. The party must define itself. Fail to define yourself and you allow others to define you. And that's what's been happening to Fianna Fáil in recent years, certainly since 2017, 2018. At the 2020 election, Martin failed repeatedly to define Fianna Fáil, so Sinn Féin did it for him, with a definition that said that there is no difference between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. It is a dishonest portrayal, but Martin's actions since then have only served to encourage it. A political party's definition identity comes from the leader. The leader gives expression and substance to the party's defining characteristics. They embody what is different or unique about the party. It is what Fianna Fáil has done across its history. Rather than referring to the first, second, or third, or fourth Fianna Fáil period in government, we speak of the De Valera, the Lamass, the Lynch, the Haughey, and the Éireann eras. These leaders embodied the party's identity. But not only that, they drove it. As you look back, you can see how the party's identity matured and evolved according to the challenges and demands of the time. Thus, Lamass, who served loyally in a more protectionist De Valera government, then helped transform Fianna Fáil seamlessly into championing modernisation, industrialisation and expansion, promoting a new generation of leaders from Donal O'Malley to Brian Lenihan to Charlie Haughey. It is remarkable that the self-identifying historian, Micheál Martin, chooses not to learn these important lessons from his own party's history. Instead, his considered response as leader of his party is to disavow any role or responsibility in setting the party's direction at a time when it's never been in more peril, choosing instead to set up a special commission to review the aims and objectives of Fianna Fáil. So Martin has boldly and bravely subcontracted out a critical leadership function to a 12-person commission. Now that commission consists of very decent people. There's four TDs on it, there's one senator, there's three councillors, and there's three membership reps from the Women's Committee and from the OGRA, plus one of the aforementioned officials of the party mentioned and criticised in the Fleming report. Martin has now declared himself entirely content to allow this random committee to define tomorrow's Fianna Fáil. While it is undoubtedly better that it be done by a group appointed by him rather than allowing Fine Gael and Sinn Féin to continue to do it, it is still a craven abrogation of political responsibility by Micheál Martin. The fact that the leader of Fianna Fáil is no longer bothered about where he buys his team colours shouldn't shock us, but neither should he nor his supporters be surprised that fewer new people are now looking to don those team colours either. Now, in the days since I've written that, we've had the budget. And there's very little I can say about the budget that hasn't been included in much of the commentary over the last 24 hours, except maybe we suspected beforehand. This is a budget that doesn't appear to have any great targeting in it. Possibly the aim was to be seen to targeting at young families and the people who are striving to cope, the struggling classes, those the squeezed middle. But in doing that, I think the government has managed just to go too many directions and too many times, and has therefore it has tried to please too many people with too little resources. So therefore, the budget doesn't have a clear definition. It's not a bad budget, but it's just meh, bland, without a characteristic. And what it has done, and I think some of the reporters and some of the political commentators have pointed this out this morning, is that the budget has allowed the opposition to give itself clearer definition. So while the government is basically trying to be all things to all people, standing in the middle of the road, it has allowed Sinn Féin to say, no, we wouldn't have given tax cuts. We would have increased public spending. We would have increased government provision. And I think that's becoming a clearer definition for Sinn Féin. And it's allowing Sinn Féin to gain definition and to define itself clearer against both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together. And that's the mistake. As I said last week in a broadsheet piece on my podcast, that the test for this budget was going to be this morning. Did the newspapers, did the commentators, did the economists see this as more a Fianna Fáil budget than a Fine Gael budget? And I don't think they have. I don't think there are any clear Fianna Fáil fingerprints on this budget. Now, Micheál Martin might feel that his fingerprints are on it because it's so blurred and so bland. Maybe that is the case, but it's certainly not going to succeed, and it's certainly not going to address the problem that Fianna Fáil continues to have, which is its inability to define itself clearly and to set itself apart from the other parties on the political spectrum. Its big problem, which its closer identification to Fine Gael continues, comparison comes up with Sinn Féin. So therefore, in terms of the tests I set it last week, I think this budget fails. I don't particularly take any particular satisfaction in saying that. However, it certainly appears to be the case. However, we shall see when the finance bill and the social welfare bill come forward. Do Fianna Fáil TDs maybe exert some pressure on the government to move? But I suspect that there will be some attempts. Time will tell. As I say, we're only just halfway through October. We shall know more by the middle of November. That's the podcast for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you found it informative. And I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.